So then it's very possible that they do make it up the next week. But if the individual within the shul doesn't hear it, so then he doesn't have an obligation, mainstream approach, he doesn't have an obligation to make it up. Story has it that when the Rav was a child, so his maternal grandfather, the Velia prisoner, Velia Feinstein, said to him, you should go tell your other grandfather, you should go tell Reb Chaim Brisker that there's a Ramban and Megillah not like him, the Ramban and Megillah that Kriyas HaTorah is a Chavos HaTzibur. So in any case, so that position, so Rav Kook was explaining that that's what the Gemara is setting up here, that there is a Chovas HaTzibur to Lane, and there's a Chovas HaYachid to do Shnei Mikra Yechid Targum. It's two different ways of relating to the Parsha, and it's basically the opposite of what the Ravan is saying. The Ravan is saying that if you can't hear Kriyas HaTorah, so you do Shnei Mikra instead. He says, no, the whole point is presumably you'll do both. Presumably you'll go to Shul, and that'll be the Chovas HaTzibur, and the individual will do Shnei Mikra Yechid Targum. That's the Chovas HaYachid format of this Chovas HaTzibur. So again, the Ravan is one theory why we have such a takana. Yeah.
Ravan writes in Purush, make it the Kori Ba'ola and the.
Yeah, exactly.
When it was originally instrumented, they weren't the rules.
So how does it? I think it may be, if I remember correctly, one of the tiniest in the Ravan, but I think that's how he sets it up, if I remember correctly. That the three roles in laning is the Balkore and the Ola. And the Metagram. So David is questioning if when the time of the Kana was there a Balkari and an Ola, or was it just a
Rav Kook said
that no, the whole point is the opposite. It's supposed to be a Chovas HaTzibur and a Chovas HaYachid, and Kriyas HaTorah and Shul and a Chovas HaTzibur, and Shnei Mikra is a Chovas HaYachid. So the Ravan says just to make up when you miss the Tzibur's lining, he says no, the whole point is you're supposed to have both. That's one shita as to why it's out there. Again, it's not a shita that has played a major role in the development of halacha. Other theories, more like Levush, right, simply put, Kidei Shiye Baki Batar, that we should know the whole Chumash. So Chazal wanted that there should be the system in place that we should have the whole Chumash. And Tzlach writes, commenting on our Gemara, quoting the famous pasuk, Chut HaMishulush Leg Meheru Yinotek, that if you have a string that is wrapped around three times, it's a stark string. So too, there are three, the verse is read three times in one form or another in order to make it strong, and the point is that we should know the Torah. This nature of the third string we'll come back to in a few minutes. The Aruch HaShulchan writes that the Chiyuv of Talmud Torah is basically Limud and Shmir, that you have to kind of basically do the Mar Makomos first and then hear it. So that's really the way things are supposed to be set up. That first you do Shnei Mikra, that's the Mar Makomos, and then you're supposed to hear it afterwards in the Kriyas HaTorah. The Einayim LeMishpat, commenting on the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, makes the point which could have been the same as the Aruch HaShulchan's point, but he takes it in a different spin. That he observes that according to the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, although I think the Minhag HaOlam maybe to be makel on this against the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, but according to Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, the Kriyas HaTorah in Shul cannot count for one of the readings. While you're reading it with them, can't count. Again, I think the Minhag HaOlam maybe didn't make one on this. But you could say the reason it can't count is because that's what the Aruch HaShulchan is saying, that you have to do the Mar Makomos first and then hear it. But the Einayim LeMishpat understood a different function in this, that the idea is that, again, in that time, so this is David's point, that in the time, it's questionable if in the time when this kind of was made, did they have a Baal Kari? Assumption is presumably they didn't have a Baal Kari, so you may get called to lane. If you may get an Aliyah, so you have to be prepared to lane. So we all know that if you just read the Parsha twice with Targum, so we can all lane flawlessly. So if you do Shnei Mikra, so you'll be able to lane. I think there are some Mefarshim who suggest, by the way, that this is what the Gemara means by Ma'arichim L'Yom V'Shneisiv, that the Gemara later on in Maseches Brachos tells us that there are a couple things that cut your life short, Chas V'Shalom. And one of them is if you're given an Aliyah and you don't take it. So Bismanenu, you don't take it for other reasons, but Mizman the Gemara, you might not take it because maybe you're not prepared. So if you're not prepared, so this is an Aesir to be prepared, so again it's going to give you the bracha of not having to turn down an Aliyah. That's how some suggest. The Trumas HaDeshen won't shorten it, right. The Trumas HaDeshen in Simen Chav Gimel writes, which is a different spin on the same pshita apparently, that the idea is Kidei Shiyehei Rogil B'Mashat Tzibur Kari. Again, it's not radically different from what we've been saying till now, that the idea is that we want you to have Bekiyas in Torah, specifically in that which the Tzibur is reading. And therefore, again, we encourage you to do the Mar Makomos beforehand. And if you're interested in another approach, Al Pi Derech HaNistar, so take a look in the Chidushe Chasim Sofer to Maseches Chulin, and Daf Chav Chasim Beis, The Chiddush Chasam Sofer de Chulin has a whole different approach to what Shnemekr is about. Again, it's not along a beaten path. So feel free to take a look over there. Okay, so now coming off of that, so as we said, the Gemara has a very mysterious line. And, the Gemara says this obligation of Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum is even Atarus V'diva. Thank you. What does that mean? What does this pasuk mean plucked out of nowhere as the paradigmatic pasuk after Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum? So this is a pasuk in Parashas Matos in Perek Lamed Beis, pasuk Gimel. So it's here talking about the Bnei Gad and Bnei Ruvain and all of their livestock, and how they went to Moshe, they listed all the cities. So one pasuk is, Ataros v'divon v'yazer v'nimra v'cheshbon v'al'ela usvam nivou v'om. So this pasuk apparently is a reference here, although there's some mafreshim who suggest that maybe actually it's a reference to a later pasuk, divon v'ataros, maybe the gears should be switched. But the mainstream understanding is a reference to this pasuk. And for some reason, this pasuk is cited as the example of a pasuk after Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum. Now, why is this cited the example? So you have different mahalchim, and there's a whole side of Rishonim have a certain approach, and in Achronim there's another mahalch. So Rishonim, starting off with Rashi, so if you saw Rashi, Rashi says, Se'ein bo Targum. So hopefully you will now look at the Unklus, where you will see there is a Targum. So maybe that indicates that Rashi had a different unkulos, that our unkulos nowadays is somewhat of a merger between different targumim. But this, of course, if you look it up, this question will hit you right in the head, that Rashi is telling you there's no unkulos, and there is an unkulos. But we'll have to deny that reality for some reason, assume that Rashi had a different unkulos, that the unkulos we have has been somehow been merged with other things. So apparently Rashi did not have a targum on this pasuk. And so Rashi is telling us that's why we don't. You may have thought that this was not a pasuk to read the Targum for, because the Targum is just going to tell you the same thing over again. So that's the Chiddush of the Gemara. And Tosfos is bothered by this for a couple of reasons. If you see, I feel Tosfos, I feel Taurus v'divum. So Perush Rashi, I feel Taurus v'divum she'ein bo Targum. She'starach lekroyso yishlov shapalman be'ivri. Now, first of all, those words are not in our Rashi. It could be other Rishonim say this. This actually, you'll see if you look at the Rashi, Rabbi Yon is actually a disputed point. But Tosfos is filling in for Rashi that since there's no Targum, you have to read it three times, but read the other time in Hebrew. Just skip the Targum idea. Sorry? Could be you only have to read it two times. Right, but what does it mean? What was the Havim mean, basically? What's the only alternative?
To read it three times in Hebrew.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying, basically reading it could be that. I mean, what's the half meaning? To read it in Targum or to read it in nothing?
No, the Gemara's half meaning could have been maybe to read nothing. What's the feel of Taurus and Demon? The Gemara can only be Machabe.
I mean, the words are going to be the same thing as the Hebrew either way.
Yeah.
Right, okay. I hear you. But on another point, you'll see how this comes out to be a little bit of a shiloh. So the kasha, my nakar ataros v'divon. So Rashi says, the Tosfos asks, so why is it quoting this pasuk? First of all, sheyesh lami kol makom targum Yerushalmi. That we know some targumim, and in our case, it ends up in the handwriting of Unklus. But at least there are some targumim out there that do have a targum for ataros v'divon. So it's not a great example. And Tosfos goes on to say, Hayeloloi Marsha said Ruvain v'Shimon, right in the beginning of Parsha Shmos. So we have a whole listing of all the tribes of Israel, all the people who came down to Mitzrayim. Ve'elu Shmos Bnei Yisrael Boim Mitzrayim. And the Pesukim list off all the names of the Shvatim. So that would be a good example. Let's use that as an example for a pasuk that just names and doesn't really have any targum. So here, the Gemara is giving us a less famous example, first of all. If I said the pasuk at the beginning of Shmos, so everyone would recognize it. I say, Taurus V'divon, and you have to work to figure out what pasuk we're talking about. And it's not even a great example, because the Targum Yerushalmi has a Perish, and for us it's an even worse example, because our Unklus has a translation. So Tosfos says, it's got to be a different pshat, Yeshloimer Mishum Hachin, HaKadivon Afal, Gav Shein Bor Targum Yadua, Ela Targum Yerushalmi, even though it's not the same Bavusta Targum that we have, it's the Targum Yerushalmi, still, Tzarech Likor is Gimel Pavim HaIvri, and you could have had to read the Hebrew three times, Mikol Makom Yaser Toiv Likros Pam Shlishis B'Targum. it's still better to use this Targum Yerushalmi than to just read it three times in Hebrew. So that's the difference between Rashi and Tosus, how to relate to what this pasuk is. And if you look in the Rush and you look in Rabbeinu Yonas, you see a little bit of a different spin on this. The question is, if you're going to say that this pasuk is different than Reuven and Shimon, because at least in some Targumim there is a Targum, so the question is, what does that do for the status of Reuven and Shimon? This is basically what that was addressing. So what happens to a pasuk like Reuven and Shimon, which nobody translates into anything else other than Reuven and Shimon? So then it could be, if this is the difference between the Rush and Rabbeinu Yonah, it could be that you only have to read two times, or it could be that you should read three times in Hebrew. And there's a whole discussion in Sefer Birkas Chayim that we referred to, what does that reflect as far as the nature of the Takana Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum? Is it really a Takana to read the Pasuk three times? Like the Slach had said, Chuta Meshulah Shol Mehenri Yenotek. It's just that once we're reading it three times already, we might as well make one of them the Targum so we'll understand it a little better. Or is it really just a din to read the pasuk, and we say read it twice to give it cheshivas, and then read it a third time to understand what it means? But if the third time is not going to tell you anything new, then maybe there's no point. So again, as machlokas are showing how to relate to Reuven v'Shimon, which is not the example the Gemara gives, do we read that three times in Hebrew, or do we just read it twice? Maybe that tells us something about the nature of the three times takana. But in any case, what's our message from a Taurus V'divon? So it seems to be, according to Rashi, that there's no Targum for this, and therefore you have to read it three times anyway. And according to Tosfos, it's no, this Pasuk has a less Yadua Targum, so that's what you have to read in that Targum. It's preferable to read that in that Targum. But a Pasuk like Reuven V'Shimon, so that's a different question, which we saw differences in Rishonim how to relate to. Hi. On which issue? On Reuven Shimon? So it seems to be that we read it three times. I think that's a more mainstream approach. You could check in Shulchan Aruch. I think that's a more mainstream approach. The Rush has to do that.
The Rush
wasn't so convinced by it. Right? His Efshir, right? So it seems to be the more accepted opinion in Shimon. Right? You could look at the Ritva. It appears in parentheses. And the commentators talk about it. The Ritva doesn't really hold me so much. This is the more mainstream approach. In any case, in Achronim, you see more creative suggestions also about what's going on here exactly. What's the difference between this pasuk and other pesukim of names, including, as we'll see in a second, earth-shattering comment in the Torah Tamimah. Very controversial, mysterious statement in the Torah Tamimah. So the Taz writes that the intent of this Gemara is to tell you that if we're talking about Reuven v'Shimon, so Shivtei Kos, so yeah, of course, that's got Kedusha, that's a holy thing. But Taurus V'Divon, these cities, you might think, what's the point in coupling with the Targum? They're not so significant. You find different spins on this in different Achronim. Some point out, like in the Ksavim of Yonasan Aipshus that we referred to a couple times, some point out that there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says that it's forbidden, when you have a city that was a city of Avodah Zarah and then became a Jewish city and its name got changed, so it's not right to use the Avodah Zarah names for the city. Unless the names are in Chumash, then it's okay. So what if the name is in the Targum? Then maybe these names that the Targum tells us, Machlelto, Malveshta, these are the old Avodah Zaradik names, and they were changed to Ataris V'Divon. So maybe it's not right for us to mention these Avodah Zaradik names. So the Chesh is that the existence in the Targum, that's also like it's in the Pasuk. We know the Gemara tells us in Megillah, the Targum is a Masorah from Sinai. So maybe that's good enough. It's another spin. I mean, there are a number of different versions of how this theory plays out in the Svarim, basically addressing this fact that these are Avodah Zaradika names that were changed. So maybe that's somewhat the Chiddush, that it's less obvious to us that these names are worth translating, or maybe we might have thought that it's wrong to mention the translation, or it's wrong to say it at all. So that's the Chiddush of the Gemara. So what did the Torah Tamima say that was so wild? So the Torah Tamima said something which is very difficult to understand on the surface, and we'll see how you could possibly understand it. He basically says that this pasuk you could skip and it wouldn't matter. Sounds like a shocking statement, right? They're saying a pasuk in the Torah doesn't really make a difference so much. You know, you could just leave out a pasuk and it doesn't affect the integrity of the Torah. That seems to be philosophically a very difficult statement to accept. So I have to be makar tov to my grandfather, Zechon Lebracha, who was a rabbi in Los Angeles, and he wrote a commentary on the Torah Tamimah. So he gives you the context to understand what exactly the Torah Tamimah was getting at here. If you look at the commentary of Rabbi Lazar Moshe Hurwitz in the back of the Gemara, So you find it's printed in our Gemaras, so you can look it up. So Rav Lazar Marshall Hurwitz happened to have been the father-in-law of the Torah Tanina, and says something similar, as you can assume this is basically the same Mahalach. And basically, you understand from looking at Rav Lazar Marshall Hurwitz, so what is he saying here? He's basically saying that normally if a Pasuk is just translated, if the Pasuk is just names, and the Targum is not going to tell you anything. So yes, I would think you could skip the Targum. That's reasonable, because the Targum is not telling you anything more than the Pasuk. But, let's say I'm going to do that with Shmos, right? So if I'm going to read the beginning of Shmos in Aramaic, so, and I'm going to skip the part that just translates the names, it's not really going to work. Because what's going to happen? So I'll read V'ilan, Shmas, B'nai Yisrael, however it begins, something like that. You know, let's try reading it in English to make the point. Guys, read it in English, the Targum. And these are the names of the children of Israel who were coming to Egypt. With Jacob, da-da-da. No names. Right? I'll skip the names because they're not translating anything. So the sentence is not going to work. The paragraph's not going to work. These are the names, and there aren't any names. So usually, if the pasuk is only names, even though the Targum is not adding anything, the context forces you to read the names anyway. So I would have thought I could skip the pasuk, I could have skipped the targum of the pasuk, but the context won't allow it. But, says Rav Lazar Marshall Hurwitz, there's one pasuk in the whole Torah where you might think that even though it's only names, and I could skip the targum, and the context doesn't force me to read it. And what's that one pasuk? This pasuk of Taurus Vedivim. So Kamash Malan, no, it's not true. Here the context is also relevant, and again, the grandfather to say from Yeshivas Nefesh, explains a little bit in the context of Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven and why this pasuk was part of what was going on. And so therefore the Chiddush to Gemara is no, even this one pasuk, the context really is forcing you to read it, even if you don't think you understand on the surface why it is. So basically that's probably what the Targum Tanina means, that normally I could skip a pasuk that was only Targum except that the context forces it. This is the one pasuk where the context does not appear to force it, and the Gemara is telling me that no, you're wrong, it does force it. There is no such pasuk in the Torah.
Skipping it during
Kriya Shema,
or just
no skipping it during Targum, during the Targum, because it's still part of the Torah, it's still important part of the Torah, but the Targum is only going to tell me the same names over. Let's assume again, like Rashi, like I don't have any translation of this pasuk. So the pasuk, the Targum is just going to say the thing over again. So what do I need to sit the Targum for if it's not going to tell me anything? So maybe you're right. Maybe I don't need the Targum if it's not going to tell me anything. But most of the time, the context forces me to say those words. And here, it might not be true. Hi.
Is this Mahalach contingent on the order in which one?
Yes. This is our next point. So basically, what David is helpfully segueing us into is this is also a dispute in Svarim, is a dispute in modern Svarim. I'm not going to tell you how to take a side on. But this probably impacts the question of what is the proper approach for Shnai Mikra. Do you say it's Pasuk, or do you say it's Parsha? Now, by saying Parsha Parsha, of course, I'm not talking about Kisisa. I'm talking about Stuma Supsuchos. Do you read the whole? Do you read that whole section and then the Targum, or that section twice and then the Targum, or do you do it per pasuk? So this whole pshat seems to be assuming that you're doing the whole parsha together, and therefore I'm reading this whole section in Aramaic straight, right? V'ilein Shemas Bnei Yisrael, and therefore the context is forcing it. If I was doing it pasuk, this whole vort wouldn't come up because I could read the pasuk and then read the Aramaic, read Reuven Shimon and then skip the Aramaic. So this whole vort seems to be presuming, as David is correctly intuiting, that we're talking about reading it as whole parshias and not reading it pasuk at a time. Some point out that maybe this should be different for the pasuk of Kriya Shema. So again, to bring us back into our home topic of Kriya Shema, so the Mishnah does tell us that Ha'imr Shema Shema Mishaskin or so, that if somebody says the pasuk of Kriya Shema twice, so we tell him to be quiet because that seems to evoke images of Shtei Rishuyos, seems to create the impression that there are two gods who you're pledging allegiance to. So some posts can say that even if you're reading Shnai Mikra pasuk, here's a case where it's not kedai to do that, because to read the pasuk of Shema twice in a row is perhaps a violation of this din in the Mishnah, Imr Shema Shema Mishaskin or so. Others are not so concerned about this. Others say that it's only when you're doing it derech tefillah, but if you're doing it derech limud, that it's not going to be an issue. That's a question in poskim, whether or not to read Shnai Mikra, to read the pasuk of Shema twice in a row, would that come afoul of this din in the Mishnah and Megillah and Brachos of Imr Shema Shema Mishaskin or so? It's a little bit of a question. The to say the whole pasuk twice, we. Oh, which one is which in the Mishnah? I think that's the Mishnah. I don't remember though. I think so. I could be wrong. But either way, it's to get either way, it's frowned upon. So the question is, if I'm doing Shnai Mikra and I'm reading Shema twice, so is that a violation of this din? That's a shayla. There's some posting who say that even if you're normally going to do it like that for Shema, you shouldn't. And others are not bothered by this. Others say that this is not a violation of that din in the Mishnah. That's only when you're doing it derech tefillah. In any case, so when it comes to the parashas Yom Tov, Rav Moshe Feinstein wrote in the Tshuva that he seems to strike him as pashut, that there is no obligation to do an additional Shnai Mikra for the Yom Tov readings that are covered in other parashas by themselves, as well as for the Dala parashas. Sorry, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and the Tshuva is in or Igris Moshe or Chaim Chelik Gimel and Sinan Mem Vav. I'm sorry, could be. Recall, but Rav Moshe discusses it based on the Trumas Hadeshen, that he says that even if you're going to say the Trumas Hadeshen is telling you that the idea is to be ragil in what the parish is reading, what the Tzibur is reading, so Rav Moshe explains that this does not necessarily mean that every time there's a Kriyas HaTorah there's an additional chiyuv to have a bekiyas in it, but that the normal structure of the parshiyas is enough. While there are those who thought it maybe should be totally on the reasoning, that if it's a general idea of bekiyas in Torah, so then you only have to do it based on the normal parsha schedule, but if it's some idea to have some kind of shaykh specifically to the Kriyas HaTorah, whether for laning purposes or whether that's part of the nature of the Talmud Torah of Kriyas HaTorah, so maybe we should be machmer even on this, which I think is an approach you find in the Lubavitcher Rebbe's writings also, the Tshuvas Av Mori Chabad and Simenayin Dalet, he seems to recommend even preparing the Haftorah. And the question becomes, so once we talk about an obligation of Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, so is this something which becomes kind of like a chayves hayom, something that becomes part of the structure of the day and your normal chiyuvim towards the week? So there are a number of nafkaminas of that question. One question would be, what about if you're making it up? It happens to be it's a dispute in Rishonim whether or not it's possible to make it up. Many are makel to say you can make it up, although you might consider that a chumra depending on your perspective. Many are makel based on a Rabbeinu Simcha that you can make up Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum. So the Maharsham has a tshuva in which he discusses, so what happens if I'm making up an old parsha? So should I do the normal parsha first or should I do the old parsha first to keep things straight? So his first glance, his first instinct is to think that, well, if it's last week's parsha you're making up, then you should do it straight, do last week's parsha and this week's parsha. But if you're making a parsha from 3 months ago, then better to do this week's parsha first and then make it up. But in the end, he basically decides that, in any case, you do this week's parsha first, dumya to tefillah. That just like in tefillah, when, as you see in the fourth parak, we'll get up to that tomorrow, just kidding, that the fourth parak, so the din of tashlum by tefillah, is that if you, let's say you forget shacharis, so you're saying two minchas, so the very serious din in tashlumin, that mincha must come first, and then the tashlumin is second, that makes a big difference the way things play out. So Shnai Mikra should be treated the same way, that you should do the chova first, and then do the tashlumin. And that seems to also flow from seeing it as a chova sayom type structure, which also impacts on the question, is also a shayla in poskim. What about avelus? That if Rahman al-Islam, somebody is in Shiva, so is he permitted to do Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum? Is that a violation of his Talmud Torah prohibition? Also, let's say in Tisha B'Av, let's say especially if somebody has a constant practice of always breaking it up, every day they do one Aliyah a day, so Sunday they're doing Rishon, etc., etc. So is such a person permitted to continue that practice on Tisha B'Av? This is a Shaila in Poskim. Rav Adji Yosef was makel on this. And this may be able to allow it, right? Well, there's zikr kula. It's only the question of making it up. It's the question whether it's a kula or a chumra. But to let you do it on Tisha B'Av, it's for sure a kula. But the question is that... So that seems to imply that it basically takes on a structure like karbanos, you know, like kriya shema. Like it's no longer viewed as Talmud Torah, like it becomes like a part of the day. Rav Kook in the Tshuva Narech Mishpat, so he suggests that based on the opinion that you can do Tashlumin, so that then he would not recommend doing Shnai Mikra during Shiva. And you could take that in a pragmatic way, you could take that in a theoretical way. Basically, it could be saying that since you can make it up, so why compromise your avails by doing it now? Or you can say that in a more theoretical sense, that he's saying that since you can make it up later, so that means it's not really a chiyah for this day, it's really a Talmud Torah obligation. And a Talmud Torah obligation, there's no reason you shouldn't be doing that during Avelis. You should only do it if it was like Kriyashma, if it was like Karbonis, if it was a Talmud Torah that took on the status of a Tefillah type thing. But if it's something that's just really a learning type obligation, so better you should do that a different time, and you should take advantage of the opportunity to make it up. Hi. So that's actually a discussion. Many poskim seem to assume that it's a good idea to do it with trap. Sternberg has an essay about this in Mo'ed Mizmanim, it's in Chilik Vav and Simas Adiches, if you want to look it up. There's also a tshuva about this in Rav Harfinus, the tshuvas, which I probably don't have access to here. Rav Harfinus is more well known for his Svarim on Zmanim, Yisrael Ba'Zmanim, but he also has tshuvas called by Baruch David. There is an idea that he's finding in the Rabbaz, and they always say that it's a good idea to do it with the trap. Whether or not that's ma'akev is a discussion, but for various reasons the trap is recommended, either because the trap has kavanas that we're not always sensitive to, and it in general helps you to understand the sentence structure, and especially if you believe that it's some type of preparation for the Kriyas HaTorah, so all the more so there's going to be an edge to it. So you do find such a discussion posting, whether it's ma'akev or not, one could question. We'll just mention one more point about this, and maybe a very quick reference to Erev Yom Kippur. So, first of all, what do we do nowadays as far as what do we translate Targum? So, there are those who understand Targum to be Rashi. If you look at Rashi in our Gemara, shockingly, you don't see that. But this goes to a theoretical question, which is relevant to Rashi, and which Tosfos addresses a little bit in the previous Tosfos. It's already in Chesem et Alash, Shnai Mikra V'Echa Targum, and so the reference here is also a Tosfos in Sota that's relevant to this. The question is, what do we mean when we say Targum? This is really a theoretical question. Is the Gemara telling us that Targum means Unkelus? And a reflection of the fact, again, in the Gemara, in the beginning of Megillah, that the Unkelus has some type of Halig Masorah going back to Sinai, that there is some very great significance to the Targum Unkelus that we have, and then it becomes a little more tragic to realize, we see from this Rashi, that the Unkelus that we have is not really pure Unkelus, apparently, because Rashi tells us one thing about Unkelus, and our Unkelus doesn't match that, so then that raises questions as to the integrity of our modern-day Unkelus. But since the Gemara does say that Unkelus has a Masorah back to Sinai, so maybe that's what our Gemara is addressing here, that we want to have Targum for that purpose. Or is that not what the Gemara is telling us? The Gemara is telling us that we want to be able to understand the Pesukim better. So we should do something that's going to explain the Pesukim to us. And this is a question that will go back to our central question of what is the function of Shnayim Mikra V'Echad, what's the initial takana of Targum, what exactly is going on. So this is an unresolved point in the Shulchan Aruch. And the Shulchan Aruch basically recommends that the Yirei Shamayim will do both. Yirei Shamayim will do both Unkelus and Rashi, basically addressing the fact that we're not totally sure what is the function of Targum. Is the function of Targum to reflect this tradition from Sinai of Unkelus, or is it to help us understand the Pesukim better, and therefore maybe Rashi is a better tool for that. And maybe, as someone suggested, maybe Aryeh Kaplan is a better tool for that. Maybe the Living Torah is a better tool for that. So that's a question. So that's why the Shulchan Aruch recommends that it's kedai to do both in order to fulfill both these goals. And Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld in a tshuva suggests that basically we have here is a mitzvah de Rabbanan, so it's a sfeika de Rabbanan. So you would have thought you should be mekel. But we have the approach as a random psachim like this, that if we have a suffix or a button, is it either this or that? So we can't be makel, because we can't be makel to say that it's neither, because then we have nothing. So we have to be machmer to assume it's both. So basically, even though it's a sfeika de Rabbanan, we have to go l'chumra, and that's what the Shulchan Aruch is addressing when it recommends both Unkelus and Rashi. Okay, in any case, those are some general principles that are relevant to Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. Just to say some brief points about this other din in the Gemara, because it is an important din, and this is really where it's found, but it's not our Kriyashma topic, so we'll just use some remaining time today to quickly address it, and tomorrow move on. So there is a din in the Gemara of eating on Erev Yom Kippur, and it's a big discussion, what exactly is that about? We've shown in debate why you have such a din of eating an Erev Yom Kippur. If you look in the Shari Tshuva, Shari Tshuva Ben Yonah quotes all the reasons. He has a number of different spins on it, so a lot of the different opinions that you find in Rishonim are all in Rabbeinu Yonah. And the Ritva and Rosh Hashanah and Daftas also has some of this. The Rush, the different opinions out there as to what exactly is the function of this mitzvah of eating an Erev Yom Kippur, and it basically breaks down into two schools of thought. On the one hand, there is a school of thought that says the reason you eat an Erev Yom Kippur is to prepare for the fast. So what does that mean, to prepare for the fast? So the majority view of that is that you prepare for the fast, that you don't want to die on Yom Kippur, so therefore you want to make sure that you eat on Erev Yom Kippur. That's what we discussed a few days ago, that we saw that the Hagas Ashri here says you don't make a bracha on something that's to prevent sakana. So some explain that's why you don't make a bracha on eating Erev Yom Kippur, because the whole goal is really to prevent sakana. We have a tradition, the Yerushalmi has somewhere, that the reason we don't say Sveka Diyoma by Yom Kippur is because people couldn't survive to have 2 days fasting, which the Shaila became Lamaisa 7 years ago, when the yeshiva guys who were running away from the mirror in Europe during the war and ended up in Shanghai and some of them ended up in Japan. So Japan is a dateline Shaila. So it's a question when Yom Kippur was supposed to be observed in Japan. This was a machlokas between Rabbi Chiel Michel Tkachinsky and the Chazon Ish. The details of this can be found in the Chazon Ish art scroll book. So, Dikative. The question seems to be, the suggestion then was raised of fasting 2 days Yom Kippur, and this Yerushalmi that is considered to be a sakana, that was raised. So here too, it could be this is to prevent that sakana. Taka Safik in the Beis Yosef, the Gemara says that whoever fasts, whoever eats and drinks on Erev Yom Kippur, it's counted as if he fasted 2 days. So the Beis Yosef says, well, so then maybe what if I do fast 2 days? That should also count as if I fasted 2 days. So is that some type of goal that we have, that really ideally you should be fasting 2 days? That's a question. So some understand it like that, that maybe for some reason there is some really ideal of fasting 2 days, but since that's physically impossible, so this other mahalach of eating, counting as fasting, definitely an attractive approach towards fasting in general. So this idea of eating, counting as 2 days is a way of somehow serving this goal of fasting 2 days. That's why the Sefer says, so maybe if I'm capable of fasting 2 days, maybe that's even better. But that's not such a mainstream view. But I just want to say, as it seems to be, that I could be preparing for the fasting through eating is what we're talking about here. The Torah Tumimah does discuss a flip side of this view. Then again, maybe the idea is that really for some reason we're supposed to be fasting 2 days, but it's not possible for us to fast 2 days. But the doctor will tell you that if you feast on the day before, it's going to be harder for you to fast the second day. So maybe the idea is not that it'll help you to get through the fast, but it'll make it harder for you to get through the fast. And maybe that's kedai, because maybe really for some reason we want you to be fasting 2 days. So, but again, that's the less popular view. The more popular view of the is all within the first school of thought. The more popular view within the first school of thought is that we want you to have we want you to survive the fast, and therefore eating will help you to survive. You wouldn't have wine in Yerushalayim? No, it's not an issue of suffix. I mean, we don't know exactly what it's based on, but maybe for some... I didn't mean to say that it's all coming out of Sveka Dioma, but maybe for some reason there's an ending to fasting 2 days. No, I don't think, I don't remember him necessarily explaining it, but the Gemara seems to be implying that there's some inyan of fasting 2 days. We only mentioned the Sveka Yoma point to mention that, in general, there is an attitude in Chazal that it's not considered possible to fast 2 days. But assuming that this Gemara is telling us on some level it's a good idea to fast 2 days, and we do it through eating, again, that's a very attractive approach to fasting in general. So what if, in theory, I could get away with doing it? But the other different school of thought is that it's not about that, but that basically the idea is that really Yom Kippur is a yontif. Yom Kippur, as the Gemara tells us in Tainus and Bava, Yom Kippur is the happiest day of the year. Yom Kippur is not Tisha B'Av, it's a day Nimchlu B'Avonos. It's a tremendous thing. So really, we should be partying, right? The Yerayim basically writes this. Yerayim writes that there is a clear Chiyah of Simcha on Yom Kippur, and we should really be having a Suda. But it's not shaykh to have the Suda, so we therefore, because there's one technical detail about this Israkarius of eating, so therefore we push the Suda up. But it could be that the Suda that we have on Erev Yom Kippur is a way of having a Suda in honor of Yom Kippur, in recognition of the fact that it's a Yontif that should have the Chi of Suda. It's just not technically possible. So the Acharonim of the Sofik, Rabbi Akiva Eger, has a famous Tshuva, and there's a number of Tshuvas about this, but I just want to say this quickly because we don't want to spend too much time on this. But the Acharonim of the Sofik have two Svekas. First of all, what should the din be by a chola? Let's say you have a chola who's not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur. So should such a chola have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? It's a kind of strange type of chola who Davka wants to eat on Yom Kippur and wants to fast on Erev Yom Kippur. But in theory, let's say that he, for whatever reason, medically, he's going to eat on Yom Kippur, but he therefore wants to know if he's mechuyev to eat Erev Yom Kippur. So the poskim assume that it's totally, that if you assume that the goal is to help for fasting, so if he's not going to be fasting, if he's not obligated to fast because of his sickness, so therefore he doesn't have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur either. But if it's not about that, if it's about Suda, not on Erev Yom Kippur, so then maybe he's mechuyev in the Suda, even though he's not fasting on Yom Kippur. Some poskim say that even if you're not fasting, Lisa, we have more bitachon, then maybe he's going to have Yeshua in the next 5 hours, and you never really know if you're not fasting, so even the people who are not fasting should also prepare for the fast. But in any case, so that's how they assume that the question of chola is totally on these two reasons. And the question of a woman is also totally on these two questions. Is a woman, mechuyavis, to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, so it's generally assumed that the same story applies, that if you assume that it's preparation for the fast, so women are obligated to fast on Yom Kippur, so women also have an obligation to prepare for the fast, so they're obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. But if it's a separate mitzvah of a suda and Erev Yom Kippur, is not totally on the fast, so then post can assume it should be a mitzvah seisha as man grama, and women should be pater from it. So the Kiva Eger and other achronim write that, so this chaps a major nafkamina for a isha chola, for a sick woman. So a sick woman should not be obligated to be manashach, because if the obligation is to prepare for the fast, so then she's not fasting. If the obligation is an independent chiyuv suda, so it's mitzvah seisha as man grama, so she's pater for that reason. So that's how many poskim write, that if it's a situation of a woman who's a chola, so she's not obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. And there were a number of other nafkaminas. Again, we're cutting this topic short, but the question of what is the nature of the meal, is it one suda, or is it this obligation to eat all day long? Is there an obligation of pas? Is there an obligation of basar? Does it make a difference whether it's the night before, or whether it's the hadavka has to be the day before? How about chinuch? All of this is discussed. Polskin, what about other inuyim? Is there some kind of an inuyim to be involved in the other inuyim on Erev Yom Kippur? All of this discussion seems to flow out of this question of what is the nature of the chiyuv that this Gemara here is addressing. Got it? Has a long essay on this topic. Right. Rav Kahn has a very long discussion on this topic. You take it at the Beis Yosef Shul, see a lengthy discussion on this. We'll just end on one hashkafic board this Gemara has, and that'll be it for us for Daf Ches. And again, for tomorrow, please be at least on Tes, if not on Yud. But the Gemara here has a famous line which we make reference to often. And the Gemara says, in the end of this conversation of good advice, so part of the advice was, Hizaru b'zakein sheshachach talmudo, that you should be careful in the kavod of a Talmud Chacham who is advanced in years and has forgotten his learning. So Machmas also forgot his learning because of things beyond his control. The Amrinan, as the phrase has it, luchos v'shivrei luchos munachos ba'arim, that not only the luchos are found in the Aron, but also the first set of luchos, the broken luchos, are also in the Aron. They're also placed in a mechubedik place, and we should also have a mechubedik attitude towards, so to speak, the shivrei luchos through the Talmud Chacham who no longer has possession of that knowledge. Rav Kook has in his commentaries on the Agadata on this Gemara, so Rav Kook explains that the reason we're mechabit Talmid Chachamim is we assume that all the Torah that they've learned has had a hashpa on their soul, hashpa on their personality, and ideally that hashpa is there even if the facts have been forgotten. So even if you have a Talmid Chacham who is not able to tell you all the different shittas and rishonim and psulei luv, so that doesn't take away from the fact that ideally the Torah had a hashpa on who they are, and that hashpa is still there even when the facts of the Torah are no longer there, and therefore the Gemara is telling us that we have to be equally vigilant about their kavod as we are with those Talmid Chachamim who still can tell you all the shittas Rishonim on the Psalm of the Luluf. Okay, so that'll be it for today. Again, so we're going to have to really